Okay, Rabosai. The beginning of Hilchos Taruvos, Simen Sadi Ches, deals with bittul of Isser that got mixed into Heter. So the Shulchan Aruch says, well, before the Shulchan Aruch, the Gemara says in Maseches Chulin, right, it all, this whole first sif or two surrounds one very, very important maimra. In Maseches Chulin, Daf Tzadi Zayin says, Rava Amar Abanan Mataima, Va Amar Abanan Bikfela, Va Amar Abanan Bishishim. Sometimes, if you have a mixture of Isser and Heter, sometimes Chazal said you taste it to see if the Heter tastes like Isser, then it's a problem. If you don't taste any Isser, then it's okay. Sometimes Kfela, you get a Goyish chef to taste it. And sometimes, excuse me. Sometimes you measure shishim. That's what we're used to nowadays, of course, as we'll see in the Ramad, whether the heter is more or less than a 60th, whether the isser is more or less than a 60th of the heter to know whether it's batel or not. What are the cases? Rava says very simply, although it's much more complicated than that. Okay. If you have a mixture of min b'she'en omino, two different tastes, and it's heter, like truma gets mixed with chulin, or, you know, something that's usher with a neder on Isaac, it's mixed with something that's not usher on Isaac, then a Kohen comes, he tastes it, because it's mutter for the Kohen or for other people, and he says, do I taste the Isser part or not? If I don't taste the Isser part, it's batel. What about mim she'en omino de'isura? What if lard gets mixed into my vegetable soup, and no Jew can taste it, because maybe it's treif, it's 50-50 treif? Then you get a goyish chef to taste it. If he says, I taste a little lard, then it's usser. If he says, I don't taste any lard, then it is mutter. And what if you have min bimino? Two things, excuse me, of the same taste. Let's say lard gets mixed in with beef fat and they all taste the same. Or, you know, treif orange juice gets mixed with kosher orange juice, etc. Then there's no way to taste. It all tastes the same anyway. Then you measure bishishim. Or let's say lard gets mixed with my vegetable soup, but there's no goy around. Then you measure bishishim. Okay, a few questions come up here before we start the Shulchan Aruch. We have a few questions. The first question is, where did shishim come from? So on one level, at least some of us have seen a Gemara that can answer where shishim came from. Anyone want to tell me where in the Gemara shishim comes from?
Zra b'shela.
Exactly. Oh, very good. Zra b'shela. What does that mean? The Torah says you have to, the El Nazir, the ayil brought by the Nazir as part of his closing karbanos. It's an El Shlamim that's a special Shlamim that's more chomer than other Shlamims, and it has a Zroa that's only edible by Kohanim. But you're supposed to cook the Zroa, according to one Deya, which the Gemara assumes, you're supposed to cook the whole ayil together in one giant pot with the Zroa. Ah, the time of the Zroa goes into the rest of the ayil, so how can a Yisrael eat the rest of the ayil if the time of the Zroa, which is usher for a Zar for Yisrael, went into it? The answer is because it's less than a 60th, it's about the B'shishim, and we can't, we learn Bittul B'shishim. Here we have a three-way machlokas as to what's the nature of Bittul B'shishim. There's a Shita of Rashi, which it's a little funny. When you see both the Beis Yosef and the Nosei Kelim on the Shulchan Aruch quoting Rashi's, Rashi happens to have three shitas we don't paskin like in the beginning, in the basic structure and framework of Tarovis of Isser v'Heter. Sometimes when the Achronim quote Rashi, they mean Rashi himself with all the shitas put together. But often, and don't be surprised by this, often when they quote Rashi, they don't mean Rashi himself putting together all his different shitas, which is what you would do if you're reading Rashi on Shas. In almost all the cases, there might be one tricky one. All the Rashis make sense by putting together all the Rashis. But often when they quote a sheet of Rashi, or sometimes they just mean one sheet of Rashi. So don't like start asking me. I'll quote the sheet of Rashi in 45 minutes, and I quoted the sheet of Rashi here, and they don't work together. Because sometimes achronim just mean I'm discussing one part of Rashi's shita, because Rashi happens to hold three independent shitas, which are not totally havaha. Okay, but in any case, what's the first shita? The question is, what's the nature of shishim? So Rashi is a bit of a shitas yachid. Rashi says, Zera sakasav, mida oraisa, as learned from El Nasir. Okay, that's Rashi Shita, that Shishim is the Oraisa. Again, in many places in our Siman, you'll see Rashi quoted as Dafkadon says Shishim is Midrabanan. That means they're discussing a different sheet of Rashi without the full picture of all the things Rashi held. Rashi holds Xeris and Kasim Midrabanan. That is a Shitas Yachid. Everyone but Rashi. You'll find some obscure someone. I mean, all the famous Rishonim but Rashi hold that it's only an Asmachta B'Alma and it's Midrabanan. What's the nature of that asmachta ba'alma derabanan? So here we have a bit of a machlokas. Says Tosfos and almost all the other Rishonim that it's an asmachta. But what's an asmachta for? It's an asmachta for an estimate of a din d'oraisa. Tam ke ikar is d'oraisa, or whatever you paskin tam ke ikar is. It's an asmachta, really. Chazal did experiments. They said, we want to know if you don't have any goy to taste it. How do we know if you mix Isser and Heter, if you can taste it or not? We want a rule of thumb, right? Now, what's the real answer? The real answer is every single case is different, right? It depends how you mixed in and what you mixed in and et cetera, and what you mixed it in with, right? We could all imagine that if you mix apple juice into vegetable soup, or you mix it into onions, the shear might be a little different. You can all imagine that if you mix apple juice and you mix meat gravy, the shear might be a little different, etc. We could all imagine that, you know, if you boil a piece of ham for 5 minutes in a soup, or boil the same piece of ham for 3 hours in a soup, the shear is going to be different as to what ratio can be, and you can still taste it. But we want a rule of thumb. So Chazal made a rule of thumb. We're not talking about salt and pepper here. Obviously, pepper you can taste if you put in, you know, 0.1%. But of non-spices, of normal vegetables and fruits and mostly animal products, Chazal did experiments and realized that all common treif items, if they're less than a 60th, no matter what the circumstances are, you can't taste them. All common treif items and all commonly eaten foods and all ways you mix them, if it's less than a 60th, you can't taste it. So that's a rule of thumb. It's an asmachta. It is a rule of thumb. For, I'm sure this isn't a real English word, but it could be, tasteability. Okay, the Rambam seems to have a third shita. Now, you'll ask me a question. There's one particular place where Rashi and Rambam lean a little towards Tosfos, but in general, they certainly don't. The Rambam has a third shita, says the Rambam. When you can get a guy to taste it, you know, you get a guy to taste it. When you can't get a guy to taste it, then it is, but then it's usher, unless it's batel beotzem miuto. Unless it's batel because it's so small. Midrabanan, when you can't get a guy to taste it, let's remember for the Rambam. For the Rambam, tam keikar is midrabanan, if it's less than a kezayis b'chdeichilas pras, right? Unless it's a very thick mixture. So if you're not sure exactly if it's tasteable or not, then avada, it's not an isur d'oraisa. So for the Rambam, you really could have been mekel and said isur d'rabanan l'kula if you don't know whether it tastes treif or not, right? But says the Rambam, Chazal made gzeira until it's batel ba'otze miyuto. What is otze miyuto? So here the Rambam's clearly not trying to make a rule of thumb for taste. Says the Rambam, what is otze miyuto? Well, for Arla, it's 1 in 200. For Klai Kerem, 1 in 200. For Truma, 1 in 100. Which again, Tosos disagree. Tosos say everything 1 in 60. You're just estimating taste. And for most foods, 1 in 60, because they found the smachta in El Nazir. So says the Rambam, he says El Nazir is also an asmachta. It's just a chumrah midrabanan that what he calls bitol beotzem miuto, bitol by being very small. Again, the nafkamina between the Rambam and Tosos is going to be that for the Rambam, for Tosos, anytime you mix two things and you don't know whether it's tasteful or not, you use a rule of thumb of shishim. For the Rambam, no. Sometimes you use shishim, sometimes you use 100, sometimes 200. There's all different shiurim in all different cases because it's all just a gzeirat harbanan anyway. Halacha lemaisa, we paskin very, very clearly like the like Tosos on this. But we'll see. There's many nafkaminas. One second, sorry. We'll see there are going to be many nafkaminas of this machlokas between the Rambam and Tosos and Rashi. Okay, so let's just see how we paskin. We paskin like Tosos. That 60 is a rule of thumb. It's not exeris akasav daraisa. It's not exeris akasav, quote-unquote, midrabanan. It is just a rule of thumb. But we'll see many nafkaminas. You'll have to sort of remember this board in your head because we'll see many nafkaminas of that. As a matter of fact, maybe we'll go to a nafkamina of that right now. So let's go to a nafkamina of that right now. The interesting question is, when some cases we have two options, let's remember when we don't have two options. We don't have two options in a tarovus of min bimino. You mix kosher orange juice and treif orange juice, kosher beef gravy and treif beef gravy. There is no option of tasting it. It all tastes the same. It all tastes like beef gravy. The only option is to measure 1/60. Why measure 1/60? Rashi would say gzeir sagasa midaraisa. The Rambam would say, since there's no need of tam ke'ikar midrabanan, they made gzeir of miyot, of smallness. And Tosos would say that you measure 60 because if it was a different taste, if it was beef gravy and vegetable soup, you would have to measure 60 to make sure you couldn't taste it. And they made a gzeira on beef gravy and beef gravy, atu, beef gravy and vegetable soup. Okay, but there are many cases where you have an option, right? For example, let's say lard falls into my vegetable soup. I could measure if it's more or less than a 60th, or I could get a guy to taste it. Is there a preference, what I'm supposed to do? From the Gemara, it sounds like if you have a guy, the guy tastes it. If there's no guy, then you measure it's more or less than a 60th. But is that necessarily the order? For what I mean by this, let's say a guy says, I want to have a guy taste it, even though it's only 1/50th. Is that okay? Or once you know it's 1/50th, is it usher? Or let's say a guy says, there's a guy right here, but I don't want the guy to taste it. I'll just be mako because it's 1/60th or 1/70th. Is that okay? Can you rely on the numbers, even if you have a guy? And can you rely on the guy, even if you know the number? Clearly, one thing I'll say is clear. If there's no way to know the number, you rely on the guy. Someone poured lard in the vegetable soup, you don't know how much. So you rely on the guy tasting it. Or there's no guy here, so you rely on the numbers. Clearly, the numbers are a valid way of being matur, and the guy tasting is a valid way of being matur. The question is, if you have two options, what is the rule? So this is a tremendous, well, I didn't even go there. I made too much of an assumption. Let's see the different shittos, and some of those shittos will flow from these three shittos here. So remember what we have right here. And what are we going to ask? We're going to ask the following case. What if you have, this is very simple. Let's start with the simple case. Min bimino. That's very simple. Then you measure if it's more or less than 60th. What about min b'she'eino mino? V'leka goy. Then you measure it's more or less than a 60th. What do we want to know? What if min b'she'eino mino? Actually, I take that back. V'ika goy. Right? There's a kfela. So what are you supposed to do in that case? Rava said there, you go to the kfela. But what does that mean? So here we have a four-way machlokas rishonim. Says the Rashi, Says Rashi, Shita one is Rashi. Says Rashi, you have to do two tests. What do I mean? It's only mutter if less than, or let me just say, if batel b'shishim and the guy can't taste it. Says Rashi's most machmir. Says Rashi, you know what Rava meant by min b'she'eno mino and there's a guy, you get the guy to taste it? Means you check if it's more or less than a 60th and get the guy to taste it. It's only mutter if the guy can't taste anything and it's less than a 60th. That's the big chumrah, super duper chumrah of Rashi. Where does this super duper chumrah of Rashi come from? It comes from his shita. He says, you know where 60 comes from? Doraisa v'el nazir. Of course, it's only mutter is batel b'shishim. Otherwise, there's a doraisa. You know where a guy tasting it come from? It comes from the din d'rabbanan of tam ke'ikra, that midrabbanan tam is asur. So he says there are two different isurim. Whatever is more than a 60th is asur, because we learned from el nazir, which has to do with 60, nothing to do with tam. Whatever is tasteable is asur because of the rule of tam ke'ikra, that tam is asur. Therefore, even if it's batel b'shishim, if the guy tastes it, it's asur because of the tam. Even if you can't taste it, if it's 159th, it's asur because of el nazir. It's only mutter if you meet two conditions. That is a shitas yachid of Rashi. I'm not even sure if that made it into the Beis Yosef. Okay, the opposite shita, which is the shita of the Ri and the Rush, which works with shitasam.
Tur mentions Rashi.
Oh, good. Okay, so it did make it. Thank you. He says, you do either test, meaning it's mutter if it's either batel b'shishim or the guy can't taste it. Whatever's convenient for you. That's what Rava meant by if there's a guy, you have to give it to a guy to taste. Meaning, if it's convenient to work it to measure the volume and you have measuring tools and you see it's less than the 60th, mutter, don't bother to ask a guy. If it's convenient to ask a guy, mutter, we don't care what the measurement is. Even if it's 50th or 40th, if a guy can't taste it, it's fine. Even if you don't ask the guy, if it's less than a 60th, it's fine. Why? This is Tosos L'shitasam. Because what does Tosos hold? Tosos holds that a 60th is just a way of estimating the taste. Whatever's less than a 60th, you could be on the safe side. You know it's not tasteable. So he says, look, if you want to know if you can taste it, you could ask a guy. If he doesn't taste it, he doesn't taste it. Or you can measure it. And if it's less than a 60th, you can't taste it. Either way is fine. Which means practically, I guess, you would try to measure it. If it's less than a 60th, much, or if it's more than a 60th, you would ask the guy. That's the shita of the Ri and the Rush. What's the shita of the Ramban? The sheet of the Rambam is that there is a preference. The sheet of the Rambam is that if you have a guy, you have to go to guy to taste it. Why? Because ta'am ke'ikr is a real principle. Really, Chachamim wanted you to check if there's taste. And 60 has nothing to do with taste, according to the Rambam. Remember, according to the Shitas Yachid of the Rambam and Rashi, 60 is not an estimate of taste. 60 is a separate rule. The only difference between Rambam and Rashi is that Doraisa or Drabanan. So says the Rambam, you must ask the guy. You know where 60 comes from the Rambam? That's just a drabanan in a bidyevid case. Bidyevid, if there's no guy and you can't tell whether it has taste or not, then the Chachamim said, well, you don't know if you can taste the treif or not. So you might have said to be mekel because tam is only drabanan, but that's pasnish to just tam be mekel. So the Rambam made a gzeira that bidyevid, if you can't find a guy, then you use a number to decide if it's mutter or usser. Must ask a guy. only if there's no goy, then it depends on bittul b'shishim. For the Rambam, bittul b'shishim is only like if the Eved rule that the Rabbanan gave you if you can't find a goy. But really, you want to check if it tastes like Isra or not, because the ikker is the taste. And you can't say, well, if it's less than a 60th, then that's fine, because for the Rambam, 60th is not an estimate of taste. It's just a different rule the Rabbanan made when you can't figure out what the taste is. Okay, those three shitas flow from the last board. However, there are, let's call them 1.5 other shitas. What are the 1.5 other shitas? The next shita is the Ramban and the Rashba and the Ran. Okay, the Ramban and the Rashba and the Ran hold like Riri and the Rush, that 60 is a good way of estimating taste. However, they're more reluctant to rely on goyim. The Riri and the Rush are very happy. You want to rely on a goy, rely on a goy. You want to not rely on a goy and just measure it, measure it. You know, whatever is convenient for you. You know, either way is fine with us. If the goy says it's okay, it's okay. Who cares about the numbers? If the numbers say it's okay, it's okay. It's like you have two tests to show something safe. So if either test proves it's safe, that's fine. The Rashba and the Ramban and the Ri are coming from the same place, right? That's why I said Shar Rishonim. However, they are reluctant to rely on a goy. What they say is, you know what? Let's see. Ramban, Rashba. And the Ran, they say, you know what the Gemara meant? The Gemara meant you can rely on a guy if you can't figure out how to measure shishim. How could you not figure out how to measure shishim? So here's an example. Let's remember there are two different kinds of tarovis. One case is where I drop 2 ounces of lard into my vegetable soup. Is it easy or hard to measure whether it's batel b'shishim?
That sounds relatively easy to approximate.
Right. There, we know there are 2 ounces of lard. Just check if there's 120 ounces of vegetable soup or not. Or after it falls in, check if it's 122 ounces or not. Okay, here's another case. I drop a 2-ounce ham into my vegetable soup. It cooks for 15 minutes. And then I realize that I remove it. How about that case? In that case, how do I measure if the vegetable soup was 60 times the amount of juice that came out of the ham? Do I know how much juice came out of the ham? No. So what do I have to do? What I have to do is, we'll see later, I have to say, well, I don't know how much juice came out of the ham, so let's just call it 2 ounces. And then I check if the vegetable soup is 120 ounces, then it's okay. If the vegetable soup is less than 120 ounces, it's no good. But that's a very inaccurate measure of shisha. Basically, it's being on the safe side, right? Because how much juice came out of the ham? Clearly, less than, the only thing I know, how much juice came out of this ham, the only thing I know is less than 2 ounces. Because the amount of juice that came out of the ham is less than the size of the ham, obviously. I have no idea how much it was. Maybe it was 1/2 ounce. Maybe it was 1/10 of an ounce. Maybe it was 1.5 ounces. I have no idea how much juice comes out of ham. Technically, Tom comes out of ham. You know, I have no way to measure that. Or maybe some scientist knows, but even in 2021, Apollo Bus doesn't know that. And I bet even the scientists don't know very accurately because, like, no one's ever given them a research grant to figure this out. And even if nowadays, if we gave them a $400,000 research grant, they could figure it out. Okay, but, you know, that's not valid for most of Jewish history. So what do we do? We pretend 2 ounces of taste came out of the ham because that's the only way to be on the safe side. But it's very inaccurate. I mean, it's doubly inaccurate. A, we don't really know vegetables to ham, how much they need to be in vatel, so we estimated 60. B, we don't know how much juice came out of this ham, how much tom came out of this ham, so we estimated 2 ounces. That is such a bidyeved way of estimating 60 that it's better rely on a goy than do that. And that's the shita of the Ramban, the Rashba, the Ran. What do they say? They say you follow 60 when the amount of tam iser is clear. If the amount of tam iser is clear, 2 ounces of lard fell into my vegetable soup and melted in. There's clearly 2 ounces of lard there, then you follow 60, and you don't rely on a guy. They're more reluctant to listen to a guy. When do we listen to a guy? Only when we don't even know how much Tom Isser is in there. Like, theoretically, it could be a case you don't know how much lard fell in. Or, in a more common case, the ham fell in and you removed it, and you don't know how much Tom came out of this ham and how much Tom stayed in the ham. Obviously, the ham still tastes like ham. Not all the Tom went out, right? So you only rely on a guy when the amount is unclear. Sorry, I hope you're listening well, because I know that my handwriting is whatever. It's like my handwriting's not so neat on the computer screen. I mean, my handwriting's not so neat in the first place. Everyone's handwriting is less neat when they're trying to write with their fingernail on a touchscreen. So it's a little bit of a sichon melech hamorish, a yosher b'cheshbon here. But okay, that's what they say. You'd say you only follow 60. You don't listen to a guy. You only follow 60 when you know the amount of Tom Isser. The only time Chazal said you could listen to a guy by Mim Shein Omino is if you don't know the amount of Tom Isser, such as you don't know how much lard fell in, or the more common case, ham fell in, cooked for 15 minutes, you removed it. But there's no way of scientifically knowing in our scientific knowledge nowadays how much Tom ham comes out of a ham that you cook for 15 minutes at, you know, at 186 degrees, you know, in a vegetable soup. Okay, those are the four shitas that are all pirushim in the Gemara, right? What did it say? It says if there's a goy, you follow the goy. Rashi bent says only mutter if it's less than a 60th and you check with the goy. The Bali Toso, Serena the Rush says it's mutter if it's less than a 60th or you could check with the goy, whatever's convenient. The Rambam says you must check with the goy. The only time you follow, you go by Bittul Shishim is if there's no guy, which is maybe the simplest shot in the Gemara. And the Ramban and the Ram and the Rashba, they add a little more to the Gemara. They say, if you don't know how to measure Shishim, because you don't know the amount of Tom Isser, you follow a guy. But obviously, that only meant if you don't know the amount of Tom Isser. If you know the amount of Tom Isser, you follow that. Okay, those are the four Shitas. There is a fifth Shita. The fifth Shita is the Sefer HaAgor, but the fifth Shita is impossible. Okay, that doesn't stop us from paskening that way, right? We Jews have, you know, done the impossible many times in our history. But the what does the Ugger say? What does the Sefer Ugger say? Quoted in the Darkei Moshe, not in the Beis Yosef. The Sefer HaUgger is a late Ashkenazic Rishon. What does the Sefer HaUgger say? He says, even when there's a guy, what does he say?
We never follow. You know.
We never follow a guy. We only measure everything to Shishim. Now, what's funny is he doesn't say this is my shot in the Gemara. How could it be a shot in the Gemara? Rava said, Mimashein Omino Bikfela. And he says, no. What he says is, I never saw in my life anyone do such a crazy thing. Okay. What does that mean? Everyone's going to struggle to figure out, you know, whatever, like we're all Orthodox Jews here. Like we're supposed to follow what it says in the Gemara, right? How does that fit with the Gemara, right? But, I mean, we're allowed to have Menhagim, but they still have to be based on the Gemara. So he says, nope. You never follow the guy. You always check if there's Shishim or not. Right, we are familiar with this because that's our practice nowadays. That's Ashkenazic's practice nowadays. Sephardim don't hold like the Ugger, as we'll see, although between you and me, I never actually heard of a Sephardi asking a guy to taste anything. But nonetheless, Sephardim don't hold like the Sefer Ugger. Okay, let's, we didn't discuss exactly why a guy is Naaman, but I don't think we're ready for that yet, because let's see how we paskin in this machlokas. So let us read the Shulchan Aruch. The Mechaber here, if I were to ask you, the Mechaber here is quoting the Lashon of which Rishon, and you had no idea, but just want, we're a betting man, what would you say?
Rambam.
The Rambam. Manavis. Because usually the Mechaber quotes the Lashon of the Rambam whenever he can. Basically, the Derech the Mechaber writing the Shulchan Aruch is that whenever possible, he just quotes the Rambam from the Mishnah Torah. Okay, obviously, what possible means it's somewhat subjective. But, you know, whenever we possibly like anything that could possibly fit the lesson of the Rambam, he quotes it. Nyaman, is that your hand?
Yeah, question just before we start. Does Rashi hold that she should be the Raisa even by Min Bimino or by Min Bimino or old by Min Shein Bimino?
Lechora even by Min Bimino.
He wouldn't hold the whole Bittel Berov Midraisa.
Correct. Even though everyone's going to quote him as holding that, that's what I meant by people, when they quote Rashi, sometimes they mean one sheet of Rashi that we haven't put on the board yet and not all the sheets of Rashi.
Got it, I think.
Okay, now, let's read the Shulchan Aruch. Isser shenis arev behetar min b'she'ino mino, kigon chelev shenis arev b'basar. Obviously, it's not cholov, because that would be hilchos basar b'cholov. And as the Nosa Kalim pointed out, chelev has a different taste than meat. Yitamenu goy, you give it a goy to taste. Im omer she'im bo tam chelev, if he says, it doesn't taste like fat. Osha omer she'ish bo tam l'shu pugam, or he says, I do taste fat, but it's a bad taste of fat. And therefore, tam l'fgam is mutter. Okay, this is going to be a whole simon about this. It's just thrown in here. And that's only if it won't be a good taste later. We will come back to that line. If there's no guy available to taste it, then you measure to see if it's more or less than a 60th. Likewise, it's the same type. Two of the same type of thing, just one kosher, one treif, and there's no way to know if you can taste it. Masharin be shishim, you measure with shishim. Okay, which of these five shitas does the mechaber sound like?
Rambam.
The mechaber sounds like the Rambam. You ask the guy to taste it. If there's no guy, then you're mashar b'shishim. That's what the shach says. The shach says, mashma dasa mechaber, sheyesham guy l'tom ol sharin al yidei guy. That you daf have to use a goy and not, and shishim is only b'dievet if there's no goy. So this is the, mechaber in his pshat language, he's actually quoting the Rambam, right? Lefi shach, which doesn't seem like such a big fetish because, like, that's the language going from the Rambam. However, it's not so pashuk. If you look here in the Bir Hagra, says the Bir Hagra, give me a second, in Sifkatan, one second, in Sifkatan, in one second, sorry.
Could it be the end of Zion?
Could it be that the end of Zion, yes, absolutely. Thank you. Ella Belok Felim Mutalik Gamre, Vidiver Shulchan Aruch Ein Bahem Hechreya. He thinks that there's no proof in the Shulchan Aruch. Shukadivre Gemara, the Lokashach. Against the Shach, he's just quoting the Gemara. You know, even though he's quoting the Rambam and the Rambam is clear, he's not quoting all the parts of the Rambam. Just this line, the Rambam is like the Gemara, Ein Bahem Hechreya. He thinks that he could be like the he thinks that he could be like the Re and the Rush. He thinks he could be like the Re and the Rush. And as a matter of fact, the Minhag Sfaradim nowadays is not like the Shach. They don't say whenever there's a goy, we have to follow a goy. Sfaradim generally just measure if it's more or less than a 60th and don't bother with a goy, assumingly like the Gra, who says, Ein Bahem Hechreya, that's the Minhag of Sfaradim nowadays. Okay, the Gra didn't say one way or the other. He says, Ein Lemechreya, but let's write, maybe the Mechaber. And this is the Minhag of the Sfaradim. Okay, what about Ashkenazim? So let's go on. Says the Rama, the Ein Nogin Achshav Lismochagoy, Umesharon Akol Bishishim. Okay, Minhag Ashkenaz is like the Sefer Agur, and this is the Halacha Lamaisa for Ashkenazim, that we do not rely on a guy at all. All we do is measure b'shishim. We never heard of tasting of a guy for Ashkenazim. There's a yeshivish, famous yeshivish cleverness that says, what happens in the following case? Let's say a piece of ham fell into my vegetable soup and cooked for 5 minutes at, 180 degrees. And I took it out and threw it in the garbage. And I measured it, and it was exactly 1/59th of the soup. So as an Ashkenazi, that soup is treif. And if I'm a Sephardi, I just call a guy, say, taste this. You taste any lard? He says no, and it's fine. Because, like, we all know that, cooking for 5 minutes at 180 degrees, come on, how much lard taste is going to go into this soup? It's going to be mutter. Fine. Is there any way for an Ashkenazi to be mutter? So that depends on the following machlokes. What's the reason for the Sefer Ha'agur? He says, where our minhag is different. Well, how do we have a minhag that's just totally against the Gemara? What's the svara of the Sefer Ha'agur? So let us make ourselves a board for the svara of the Sefer Ha'agur. Of the Sefer Ha'agur / Ramah. One svara is the Shach quoted this earlier, we know. The Shach quoted this earlier, is that since Ashkenazim, especially meaning the Ramah, hold we're not bekiyim in anything nowadays we're not bekiyim in tasting. That's a simple answer. And that's what he quotes in the Levush, the Ateres Zahav, v'achshav inogin lismoch atimas kohen v'goy. Now we're not somich on the tima of the kohen and the of the goy, because, okay, he didn't quite say, but if you look inside, because we're not bekiyim in tima. So there are actually many different svaras. One is the Levush, right? The Ateres Zahav, who says, Ein anu bekiyim b'te'ima. However, the Shach disagrees. We saw the Shach also in Siman Tzadivav. Says the Shach, no, not true. We are bekiyim in te'ima. We are bekiyim in te'ima nowadays, right? So the Pesach Tshuva quotes Achronim, who bring riots against him, bring defenses. He says, rather, so why aren't we somech? He says, no, we're just not somech on goy nowadays. Our minhag nowadays not to trust goyim. Okay, are goyim lying? Or do our goyim lie more than in the old days? Seems in the Gemara that they were goyim were pretty evil. But nonetheless, we're not somech. The minhag is not to rely on a goy. Right? He says, Ein somchim al hagoy. That's our minhag. Al pidin, you could be somech on a goy, but our minhag is that we don't trust our, we don't trust goyim anymore. Okay, what's the nafkamina between the Levush and the Shach? How about the Imas Yisrael? Like, what about that weird case where, like, Chulin gets mixed in with Truma and the Kohen tastes it and says, I don't taste any Truma? Then, according to the Levush, we wouldn't rely on him. He says explicitly, according to the Shach, even Ashkenazim would rely on him. Okay, that's a weird, that's not so relevant because we don't really have so much Truma nowadays. And even if we did, the Kohen couldn't eat it because they're all tummy because we have no paraduma. What about weird neder cases or what we saw in Siman Tzadivav, right? If I, I put my olives in a fleishik Tupperware, right? And I cook them on pizza and I still have some olives left in the Tupperware, then I can taste the olives. And if the olives left in the Tupperware don't taste like meat, then I can eat the pizza, right? Remember, we discussed that case. Okay, the famous yeshivish cleverness based on the Shach, they give the following etza. What if something gets mixed for an Ashkenazi and he wants to rely on te'ima, but he can't because of the minhag of the Ramah? Then according to the Shach, l'chora we pass like a Shach, there's an etza. What's the etza? All he needs is two helpers, a goy and a Sephardi. He gets the goy to taste it. And if the goy says it doesn't taste like lard, now it's mutter for Sephardim. So now he gets the Sephardi to taste it because it's mutter for Sephardim. So Sephardi's allowed to taste it. And if the Sephardi tastes it and says it doesn't taste like lard, now it's even mutter for the Ashkenazi because we believe a te'imas Yisrael nowadays. We just aren't so mechana goy. So I've never actually seen anyone do this, but it actually makes sense logically that if someone wanted to be so mechana te'ima, even an Ashkenazi could do it if he had two helpers. First, get the goy to taste it. If the goy says it's legit, then the mutter for the Sephardi, so tell the Sephardi he can taste some. And if the Sephardi says legit, now it's mutter even for the Ashkenazi. Okay, L'chora, that's true. The Rabbi Akiva Eger makes two other suggestions. Okay, both of which he thinks don't necessarily fit in all the poskim, but they're theoretical suggestions, suggest Rabbi Akiva Eger. First, I'll start with the Bach. Okay, we have to get a little bit ahead of ourselves. There is a machlokas. We'll just go through the shitas, but let's just start with the following machlokas. One second. Yeah. Why do we rely on a guy? A guy has no eid echad neman bisurim. A guy is not kashal eidos. He's not neman, right? For many reasons, right? So how can you rely on a guy? I understand how you can rely on a teimas yisrael, but how can you rely on teimas guy? A guy is not neman and yisurim. So the two main answers are already Rashi and Tosos on the page right there in Chulin. Someone want to tell me the two main answers, just the catchphrases?
Meisiach lefitumo.
Meisiach lefitumo. Do you know who said that, Rashi or Tosos?
That's Rashi.
That's Rashi. Very good. Rashi says, Meisiach lefitumo.
And Tosos says, Lomar HaKazkatel.
Exactly, or what we call nowadays Uman Lomar Umnase. Rashi says Meisiach Lefitumo. Meisiach Lefitumo means there's some fancy Latin word that lawyers know for this that I forgot, but it means he's speaking innocently. You don't tell the guy, hey, can you pass in a Shaila for me? Because if you tell the guy, hey, can you pass in a Shaila, that's asking him for Eidos, and a guy is possible Eidos. Rather, you ask innocently. What's the assumption? The assumption is that no one, it's not a matter of nemonos. It's just a chazaka if you're I know they're pathological liars, but that's a mental illness, right? Regardless of your religion and your religiosity, a normal person doesn't lie for no reason, right? That's a fair assumption. A normal person wouldn't lie for no reason. Now, of course, it's always tricky. How do you know what reason someone might or might not have? But a normal person doesn't lie for no reason, and therefore says Rashi, the reason we believe the guy is, and makes no kinta b'seich l'bitumo, you ask him innocently. You don't ask him as a halachic shayla. Like you ask the guy, I'm trying to figure out if this is the soup that I put the fat in or not. What do you think? You taste the fat in this soup, or maybe I put the fat in the other soup and I still need to add fat to this soup? No, you ask him something very innocently, and then why would he lie? Or whatever, you come with some other clever way. Tosos says, no, adraba. It's not because it's not a big deal. It's a super big deal. The rule is a guy is not neman for eidos. But a guy, again, any normal, sane human being would not want to endanger his parnasa, right? That has nothing to do with religiosity. Anyone who's not crazy would be very careful not to do anything that could endanger their parnasa. And therefore says Tosos, Kfeila means davka a chef. Doesn't mean a guy. It means a guy is chef. If a chef can't tell what something tastes like, then that rumor starts spreading that he's not a good chef because he doesn't even know what things taste like. Imagine you ask the chef, what does this taste like? He says, tastes like vegetables, and it really tastes like lard. Then what kind of chef is he? Right? Then he's a failed chef. Then he's an imposter, and no one's ever going to hire him anymore. It'll damage his reputation. That's the rule of Uman Lamarim Nasei. We use that in general in Halacha. That we don't trust Goyim in Ein Echad B'Yisurim, but we do trust Goyim if they're afraid of damage to their reputation or their business. We do trust Goyim to preserve their reputation. Therefore, if they can get caught. I don't mean if they can't get caught, who cares? But if they get caught, here is like an obvious case why they could get caught, right? Someone else could taste it and see. So, says Tosos, no, it means you find Dafka professional and you ask him, and he knows that his professional reputation is on the line, and therefore he wouldn't lie. So now, says the Bach, before we get to Rabbi Akiva Eger, the Bach's not on the page of Shulchan Aruch, the Bach, says the Bach that really there's just a change in Metzius. The Goyim, you know how like sometimes there are Goyim, you go to Arkansas and you find Goyim who mamish have no idea any Jewish things. You go to Brooklyn and every Goy knows all the halachos, right? I remember once when I lived in Brooklyn in the Terrace Gardens Plaza, which was I think a co-op apartment complex. It was in the Flatbush, so most of the people there were not so much on the Flatbush Eruv without getting into politics, etc. But it was a dead end street, so we made a block Eruv. Okay, block Erev. So at a certain point, I was in charge. Had to make sure the string was off and the lechis, etc. But also, you needed the Erev Chatzeros and you needed Tzchiras Rishos from the Goyim. So I went to Maria, the Italian guy. I mean, assume she's Italian. I don't know. Maria. I think so. Maybe something else. Whatever. It doesn't matter. Maria was definitely a Goyish lady in the management office. And I had to rent. Okay, based on Arma, based on the Rivash that maybe we're familiar with, that even if you don't rent from a guy who has control over the inside of the apartments, if you rent from a guy who has control over the outside of the apartments, that's good enough. And here, co-ops are unclear anyway, who owns what. Anyway, Kitzer, so I had to rent like the whole place from her. That's obviously a weird thing to do. You know, Mela, you know, if she heard of Protocols of the Elders of Zion, all she needs is that a Jew says, is it okay if I just take bailus over all of your property? It's only for my Jewish reasons. So I was a little nervous about it, you know, why I wanted to give her a dollar and, you know, the Jew giving you a dollar and says it's nothing and then ends up like kicking you out of your apartment building. And I started explaining very generally. She's like, oh, you mean for the Erev? Yeah, no problem. I'll take the dollar. It's rented to you. Okay, because that's a guy in Brooklyn. It's different. So what did the Bach say? The Bach paskins like Rashi. That is Mesiach Levitumo. What did the Bach say? In the old days of Chazal, the Goyim lived in Arkansas. You could really catch them an innocent question. They didn't understand. They didn't know these things. They weren't around the Jews enough to chop. But he says, nowadays, all our Goyim are totally savvy. You ask any guy to taste anything, there is no more Lefitumo. They all know why you're asking them. They all know all about the Jewish Menhagim. He just says the sociological difference. The Goyim in Chazal's days didn't know Jewish Menhagim, and the Goyim in our days do know Jewish Menhagim. I mean, it probably has to do with proportions of where you live and how many, etc. Anyway, so says the Bach, he says that the Bizmanenu Yodim Hagoyim Minug Hayehudim Lo Mashkachas Mesiach Lefitumo. That's the abbreviation in all halachic literature for Mesiach Lefitumo. Okay. He says the reason is not because we're not Bekiyim or because we decided that our Goyim lie more and we trust them less. It's just that our Goyim are more savvy than the old days. Okay. Again, I don't think that the European Goyim were smarter than the Babylonian Goyim. I think it's just they lived closer to the Jews. Okay, says Rabbi Akiva Eger, two other possibilities. Says Rabbi Akiva Eger, he says, first of all, he says, and this is a big machlokas, the Trumas Hadeshen thinks you can be an Uman Lomar Amnase and a Mesiach Lefitumo at the same time. But, says Rabbi Akiva Eger, he says no. He says, really, maybe we're Choshesh, we're Mesopik, and we're Choshesh. That, one second. Yes. We're choshesh that maybe you need Mesiach Lefitumo, and maybe you need, he also throws in one other thing now for now, maybe you need Davka and Uman, Davka professional whose reputation is on the line. And says Rabbi Akiva Eger, this is against the Trumas Hadeshen, and he says, it's mutually exclusive. If you tell him his reputation is on the line, then you have to tell him this is an important thing and not just Stam. And then he's not a Mesiach Lefitumo. If you tell him it's just Stam, a friendly question, then he doesn't think his reputation is on the line. And you don't have Uman Lomarim Nasi. Now, that's his assumption. But what he says is, in the days of the Gemara, either Rashi was right or Tosos was right. So whoever was right was right. Nowadays, we're Mesupik who's right. We can't trust the guy at all because if we tell him this is really important, then we're not Yotze, according to Rashi, because he's not Lepsiach Lepituma. And if we tell him it's not a big deal, then we're not Yotze going according to Tosos because he doesn't think his reputation is on the line. Again, he's making an assumption that people don't think their reputation is on the line when they don't think it's important. Okay, I mean, theoretically, why not just ask two different goyim? One Mesiach Lefitumo and one Uman Lomar Amnase. Okay, maybe he'd say that's too complicated to be the Minog. That's what he says. What he says is Machmirim Kimanda Omar Mesiach Lefitumo U Kimanda Omar Uman Lo Mari umnase. Ve. And they are a tarti disasre. They are mutually exclusive. And therefore, there's no way to ask a guy. Okay. Yes, Ben.
Why? Can you explain then why they're mutually exclusive?
Because he makes one assumption. An Uman is only worried about his reputation if he thinks it's a big deal. If he thinks that there's an afkamina to the question.
Oh, okay.
Start with that assumption. People only worry about the reputation when they know it's really important. That's the question. Like, if I were to ask you, let's say you are an accountant, and I stam ask you a math question, stam, and it's not important. Do you feel your reputation is on the line or not? So Rabbi Kibaker says, no, your reputation is not on the line unless I tell you it's important. And then, Mimon of Shach, if I tell you it's important, then you're not a Mesiach of Vitumo. And if I don't tell you it's important, then your reputation's not on the line. That's his assumption. Truma Sadeshin disagrees. Well, let's grant him his assumption. Okay, someone else had a question? Yoni.
Yeah, just a comment, maybe in support of this Svara. Noah, you have two things and one of your microphones is on.
It's okay. It's Svei Dinim and Noah.
Oh, beautiful. Okay. In terms of trusting doctors in Hilchot Nida, Rabbi Leibowitz recommended to us that we make sure that doctors, meaning doctors, will say whatever they can do to make the patient happy if it doesn't matter medically speaking, meaning that they're not going to take the question seriously, and it's not going, meaning if they're wrong, so to speak, halachically speaking, they're not going to care. So that could be similar to this svara, that they're at odds with each other, meaning he's only going to be worried if it's a big deal. But the doctor's like, oh, this thing doesn't matter medically, so I don't care what I tell this person.
Correct. That is the biggest problem when it comes to Hilchos Nida, et cetera. If you ask a doctor a medical opinion, okay, there's some din about this in the Achronim. Keep in mind also that until modern times, doctors really didn't know what they were talking about, right? So a lot of Rishonim and Achronim say, oh, the doctors are all shtus. Like, they sort of were once upon a time, until very recently. But that's if you ask the doctor, is this my problem? Is this not my problem? Is this going to cure it? Is not going to cure it? Then we believe them. Umen lomar nasei. The doctor's going to give you a wrong diagnosis? What do you mean? It'll be bad for him. But if you ask the doctor, did you find blood when you did the examination? Since that's not important, you don't say umen lomar nasei. In this case, even if you told him it was halachically important, you know, nowadays that wouldn't be umen lomar. It would still be umen lomar nasei because it's not his umnus. Right? Meaning, what's the difference in, there's another problem. When you ask the doctor, was there blood inside when you checked? It's not part of his umnus to know if there's blood. That's just looking. So it doesn't make his umnus any less if he gets it wrong. When you ask the chef, what does it taste like? Let me say it better. When you ask the doctor, was there really blood inside or not? No one's going to think he knows less medicine if he gives the wrong answer. Because it's not medicine. When you ask the chef, what does it taste like? People will think he knows less cooking if it is right, if he gives the wrong answer. Okay, but good point. Noah Marlow.
Yeah, so I don't mean to. I'm a little confused with Rabbi Akiva Eiger because it's the whole idea of Mesiach Lifutumo is that their intuitive gut response is going to be truthful. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger's whole svara makes no sense because he's saying that a person's only going to tell you the truth professionally.
Okay. Let me take it back because I'm going a little out of. Everywhere would be a little out of order. Because some people say we don't believe Mesiach L'Mitumo. Some people don't hold of the Kula Mesiach L'Mitumo. So that's what Akiva Eiger means. Maybe we hold that the Kula is Mesiach L'Mitumo, or maybe we don't hold of that Kula. We only hold of a different Nemonis. Because most Rishonim don't hold of the Kula Mesiach L'Mitumo for reasons that we'll say soon.
Okay.
Now it makes more sense. Maybe we don't hold that Kula at all. So if you just ask them innocently, it won't help. Meaning the machlok between Rashi and Tosa is not just how to find a case where he's Neman. It's, according to Rabbi Akiva Eiger at least, it's what rules in Nemanus exist and what rules don't exist. Rabbi Akiva Eiger is saying, we're machmir that maybe the rule of Mesiach Levitumo is a correct rule and the rule of Umen Lomarim Naseh is a false rule. And we're machmir, maybe Umen Lomarim Naseh is a true rule and Mesiach Levitumo is a false rule. And therefore, if he's a Mesiach Levitumo, maybe that's not a real halachic principle. And if he's an Uman Lomar Nasei, maybe that's not a real halachic principle. If he's both, then Mimon of Shach, one of them is a real halachic principle, but you can't be both. That's where we keep it eager. Noah Shapiro.
Sorry, didn't the Torah also quote a Rush that said that you need to have been Uman and Mesech Fitumo?
Yes, we'll get to that. Yes, so obviously that Rush, you're right. Why am I quoting that Rush is obviously against this Rabbi Akiva Eger Bemtzios, right? Or Behagdoras Hametzios. Correct. This Rabbi Akiva Eger is assuming there's no such thing as both of them at the same time. The reason I quoted the Truman Sedeshin is because the way he read the Rush is you need Nemanos because of Uman and Nemanos because of Mesech Levitumo. And obviously hold, not only could they be at the same time, they reinforce each other. That's the opposite of Rabbi Akiva Eger.
I mean, as Machlokas, what the Torah saying that the Rush held like this, depending on your ability, if the Rush holds against Rabbi Akiva Eger?
Yes, he understands, like the Machutna, the Shach, that the Rush did not mean that. That the reason why the Rush needed two things, it needed you to be an Uman just so you'll have developed taste buds, but it would have to be asked totally innocently. Okay. Now, one last answer for Rabbi Akiva Eger, which you should all have thought of already. He suggests, he doesn't think this shot in the Shach, etc. But he suggests is that Machmirim. Lashitas Rashi Inyan Shishim. We're Machmir, like Rashi Shita about Shishim in the last board. What did Rashi hold? That even if it didn't, the guy said it didn't taste like anything, you still need Shishim. Not because of taste. You need Shishim just because of Xeris Akasav of Shishim. Says maybe we're Machmir like Rashi that you just need Xeris Akasav of Shishim. Okay. Now, we're not Machmir like all of Rashi, because then even if it was less than a 60th, you'd still need to get a guy to taste it. No, but that's why he said Lenin Shishim. We're Machmir like half of Shitas Rashi, that there's a Xeris Akasav of Shishim having nothing to do with taste. If we're Machmir like Rashi, there's Xeris Akasav of Shishim having nothing to do with taste, then obviously you can't rely on the taste of a guy. What does Rashi think they were meant? He thinks the Gemara meant that there's Xeris Akasav of Shishim, plus you also needed to get a guy to taste it. And we're only halfway Machmir like Rashi, where Machmir is Xeris Akasav, you need Shishim. We're not Machmir, you also need a guy to taste it. Okay. So these are five ways you could explain the Ramah. Lemaisa, the acronym assume, like the Shach's way of explaining the Ramah, hence the Yeshivisha clever scenario where if I get a guy to taste it and he says he doesn't taste any lard, and now it's mutter according to the Machaber, I can get a Sfardi to taste it. And if he says he doesn't taste any lard, now it's a Te'imas Yisrael and I'm not relying on a guy, and it's mutter. Of course, that would be true according to Shatim 3 and 4 as well. This yeshivish trick would work according to 2, 3, and 4, just not according to 1 and 5. Okay, but the Achronim assume like the Shach. That's the most straightforward way of reading the Ramah. Okay, now we only have two things left to discuss in this Se'if. The next thing is, what we kept bringing up again, is why do we believe a goy? Why do we believe a guy? What rule is here that tells us to believe a guy? So, first of all, let's learn something else about a kfeila. Is a kfeila davka or not? So, there are three shitas as to whether a kfeila is davka or not. Davka. So, says the Rambam, notice, the Rambam said Yitamenu Goy. That's the Mechaber. Did not say the word Kfela. Right? Goy never said the word Kfela. So, one possibility is Lav Davka. If it's Lav Davka, Kfela means a chef. Why do they say a chef? So the answer is, you know, it's like if you would tell me, my chair broke, bring it to a carpenter. What if I brought it to someone who wasn't a carpenter, but he knew how to fix chairs? And we would still call it a carpenter. Like, what's the difference? He's fixing my chair. He's a carpenter, right? You call him a carpenter because right now he's doing carpentry. So too says the say the Rishonim and Achronim for the Rambam and others. He's just called a kfeila because he's doing tasting. Anyone who tastes is called a kfeila because he's doing something that has to do with cooking, but he's not really a chef. Okay, that's one possibility. Lav davka. The second possibility seems to be the Yesh Omrim in the Rashba, and maybe the Rush. I'll explain the maybe the Rush in a moment. Who says, no, you know why we have to, it has to be a kfeila? Because a kfeila has more sensitive taste buds. A kfeila tastes things that you and I wouldn't taste, right? For sure. I might taste something and say, do I taste any chocolate in this? No, I don't taste any chocolate. But a kfeila would taste the chocolate, right? This definitely happened to you, right? You make the mistake of reading the wine label and it says a bouquet of, plums, and you're like, I'm drinking the Cabernet Sauvignon, and I don't taste any plums here. But you know what? But a professional would taste the plums here. So here's a question of, what's the halach hagdara of ta'am? Does ta'am mean what most people taste? Or does ta'am mean what anyone could taste if they had the most humanly trained, the highest level humanly achievable of sensitivity of taste buds? Interesting question. We'll see a similar question when it comes to bugs, right? What counts the bugs? Something an average person could see, or something which anyone can see who has good eyesight and, apprenticed for 6 months to learn how to see things. Okay, it's a question of all these things. You know, what counts as halachically present? Something that an average person would sense with his five senses, or something that an expert would sense? Good question. So there's a Yesh Omrim in the Rashba, seems to hold, says, because a ta'am tasteable only by a chef counts as ta'am. Right, Davka.
Ben Arsh, why would that be true for a non-Jew? Why would we have a higher threshold for non-Jews as opposed to Jews or a Stam Yid? We are them on their Tima.
Yes, Mati, I think, left it on the edge of the kitchen table, dining table. Good question, Noach. You'd have to be Nidchak and say, according to the Shita, that when it says a Jew tastes it, it meant a Jewish chef also.
Okay.
Just didn't bother to say so. And if you say that's dochuk, you're right. It's dochuk. This is a dochuk shita, meaning no Rishon actually holds the shita. The Rashba quotes Yesh Omrim, who seems to hold it, but we don't know who that is or for sure what they held. The Rush is a sfeik of whether he held it, right? Because we don't know if the Rush required a kfeila and misich levituma or not. And even if he did, we don't know why. Well, maybe we'll put that on the next board. Okay, this is it's a very minority shita. And you're right, it's very docha, because then the Jew also needs to be a kfeila. So why do they only call the guy a kfeila? Okay. What's the third shita? The third shita is Tosos Udime. Right? Says Tosos, the ode. Davka, but not for time reasons. For nemonus reasons, because a guy is only nemon if he's an Uman. Not just if he's an Uman. If he's an Uman whose reputation is on the line, he's doing something that would make him look bad in his Umnus. Okay. How do we paskin? Notice here, there are two separate issues going on here. What's the getter of Ta'am? And why is a Goy Neman? Halachically, we paskin. The getter of Ta'am is not defined by what a chef would taste. If a chef can taste it, that halachically does not exist unless an average regular person can taste it. We totally reject this possibility that you need a chef for the definition of ta'am. No. If I don't taste it and you don't taste it, even if a chef might taste it, halachically that's not a ta'am. Because the halacha defines things based on the average person. Okay. Agav Very Willig would say the same thing about bugs. Says Very Willig, if I don't see the bug and you don't see the bug and he doesn't see the bug, even if Rav Moshe Vaya sees the bugs because he spent 10 years learning to be an expert on seeing bugs, halachically, that does not exist because something which an average person cannot sense with his five senses does not exist. Okay, whether everyone agrees with Larry Williger or not, we'll get to a little later in the Zman. But it's coming from the same place. Okay, but how about Nemonis? How about Nemonis? What is the standards of Nemonis? So here we have five shitas in the Rishonim, and then we'll see how we paskin. So let us move to the next board, right? Because we still don't know. Is the Nemonis because of an Oman? Is the Nemonis nothing to do with Omnus? And if so, what is the Nemonis? So let us see. And in this case, we'll see the Mechaber was not quoting the Lashon of the Rambam totally. So let us make a new board. Nemonos Goy. Oh. Okay, what are the shitas in Nemonis of a Goy? So, says Tosfos and the Ran quoted in the Beis Yosef. Says Tosfos and the Ran, Uman Lomari Umnase, that we already mentioned. Says Rashi. And Beis Yosef is noted to think that the Rush thinks that, but Rashi is very mefurish. Says Rashi, Mesiach Lefi Tumo. Okay, says the Rashba and the Beis Yosef. He says they're both right. If he's an Uman, not like Rikki Yeager. No, not. We don't know who's the which of it. They both might be wrong. They're both right. Either way is fine. I don't know which way the Gemara meant, but they're both true. If he's a professional, then even if he's speaking in full cognizance of the weighty implications of his speech, we believe him because he wouldn't ruin his reputation. If he's not a professional, if he's speaking innocently, we believe him because he's not a pathological liar. So he says, either way is Naaman. It could be Rashi would even agree to that for all we know. Who knows? But let's assume no. Rashi did not hold of Uman Lamor and Nase. He only held Mesech Vitumo. Tosos did not hold Mesech Vitumo, only Uman Lamor and Nase. Maybe they're both right. We could hold of either one. And there are two other possibilities here, which is maybe the Rush. Okay, what do I mean by maybe the Rush? There are three shitas on the Rush. The Torah quotes, Yesh Omrim, that you need to be both Mesiach Levi Tumo and an Uman. Which again, maybe Kiva Eger might think it's impossible. Okay, you need to be Mesiach Levi Tumo and an Uman. And a Kfila. And dot, 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 dot. The King Kosovo Adoni Avi Arush. So the Beis Yosef says, no, the King Kosovo Arush is just going on Mesiach Levi Tumo. Because if you look in the Rush, he says Mesiach Levi Tumo. It's ridiculous. The Rush doesn't say you need to be Mesiach Levi Tumo and an Uman. No, it's ridiculous. The chin kasev adoni avir rush. Also, tzarch lo yeda shasom kolah binyanetz beheter. Chin kasev is sealed vitumo. So this would be the Rush. The Rush would be like Rashi, according to Beis Yosef. However, some people understand that no, the Rush needs to be a kvela and misiach vitumo. Why? So says the Mechutin, Rabbi Gershom, the Mechutin of the Shach, quoting the Shach. You need to be a kfela in order to have sensitive taste buds, and the nemanis from Uman Lomareim Nase. So if you ask, what's the shita of the Rush? Depends who you ask. If you ask the Beis Yosef, he's just like Rashi, Mesiach Lefi Tumo. if you ask the Rabbeinu Gersh, right, the he quotes his Mechutin, right here in Sifkutin B's Mechutin Ha'olaf Amrumer of Gershon. Okay, the Rabbeinu Gershon. Oh, I never heard of him before. The Mechutin of the Shach says no. The Nemanis is just because of. Oh, sorry, I take that back. He also says it's only in the Fiat Vitumo. The only difference is he says that he also needs to be a kfeila to have sensitive taste buds. He thinks the rush is this phantom alleged shita that you need sensitive taste buds. But says the Trumas Hadeshen, no, you need to have two nemonises. A guy is so not nemon, we only believe him if there's two reasons to believe him. He's speaking innocently and he's worried about his reputation. Okay, so says the maybe the Rush will feed the Trumas Hadeshen. Maybe he doesn't say you need two things, or maybe he says you need two things, but only one of them is for nemonis and one of them is for another reason. Or maybe he says you need two things for nemonis. Says the right, that's why I said Beis Yosef plus Rav Gershon. Beis Yosef says you only need Mesiach Vitumo. Rav Gershon needs you need Mesiach Vitumo for Nemanis. You need Kfeila for a different reason. But maybe the rush means you need a Tzeruf of Shtei Sibos Leha'amino. You only believe him if you have two reasons together. Mesiach lefitumo plus uman. Okay, I'm a little more partial to Rabbi Akiva Eiger. How could these both be going on in someone's head at the same time? If he really thinks it's innocent, why is he worried about his reputation? Okay, that's what the Trumas Hadeshen thinks. He thinks it's innocent, but he also worried about his reputation. Fine. What's the fifth shita? The fifth shita is the Rambam. What does the Rambam say? Anyone know? Which of these does the Rambam say? What does he say about Uman Lomarim Nase? What does he say about Misil Fituma? Basically, we have all the possibilities. It's A, B, A, or B, or A and B. What does the Rambam say?
Neither A nor B.
Exactly. He says nothing whatsoever. He says nothing whatsoever. The Rambam says, Neman Stam. Okay, now, two of these shitas are very, very difficult. Two of these shitas are very difficult. And there's a lot to say about them, but we will be Makatzer. This shita is difficult. We'll call this all one shita for our purposes. Right? This shita agrees Mesiach Vituma Tzorich Iyun. Why is it Tzorich Iyun? Because there's a rule found in Shulchan Aruch. Noach, what's your question?
Isn't there another option that Taz is option?
What do you mean?
That Mesiach Vituma doesn't have to hit the threshold of Nemanus at all or Eidos at all, and therefore it works.
Yeah, but that's saying Mesiach Vituma, just giving a different, you know, a different engine behind Mesiach Vituma, but it's still Mesiach Vituma, right? Right, still trying to explain Rashi.
Nechon, but it redefines Nemanus.
Okay, fair enough. Let's come back to this. So this is a Tzorich Iyon because the Gemara says Mefurash, ein Mesiach Vitu Neman, Mesiach Vitu is only Neman by Inisad Rabbanan. It's only Neman by Inisad Rabbanan, not by Inisad Raisa. Oh, first of all, before we go into the, how do we Paskin? I'm sorry. First of all, how do we Paskin? What does the Mechaber sound like? Let's first do Psak. What does the Mechaber sound like? 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5?
Five.
The Mechaber said, "Vitzara shelo yeda shesom chenolav." He has to not know we're relying on him. Has to be two. Innocent. The Mechaber definitely sounds like Rashi. The Mechaber definitely sounds is like Rashi. However, says the Shach, that says the Shach in Sifkat and Beis, based on the Beis Yosef, that no, he also admits that Uman is okay, and he just didn't bother to explain everything in the Mechaber, but he also means that Uman is okay, and this is the Mechaber Lefi, the Shach. Okay, for us Ashkenazim, it doesn't make a difference, because we don't rely on a guy anyway. But Lechora, we agree with the Shach. Why? Because in the Beis Yosef, he was very, very strong and explicit that that's how he paskit. Okay, so let's assume, if we have to assume, again, this is for Sfardim, that we'll pass like the Mechaber Lefi Shach. Now, what are our two Tzorich Iyuns? Our two Tzorich Iyuns are Azoy. Let's take the first Tzorich Iyun is, how could she just 2 and 3 rely on Mesiyat Vituma? The Gemara says, Mefurish, we only rely on Mesiyat Vituma by Durabonans, not by Doraisis. So what are the Tzorich Iyuns? Is that Mesiach Lefitumo is Neman only in Isser Durabanan? That's one Tzorich Iyun. The other Tzorich Iyun is on the Rambam. It's a Tzorich Iyun Gomer, right? That's obvious. The Goy is not Neman in Isurin if he's not a Mesiach Lefitumo. He's not numb at all. Nothing to it, Doraisis, Durabonans. So these are strange shitas. Again, where do such strange shitas come from? The Gemara says, trust the guy. So we trust the guy, but they still have to have logic behind them. What's the logic behind them? Noach, if your hand is still up, ask a question. If not, then take it down. Sorry. Okay. So how do you answer this? So that's the Shach and Taz. Everyone struggled with answering this first question. Why do they struggle with answering the first question, not the one on the Rambam? Because we don't pass like the Rambam. So one answer is that we'll see there's a machlokas, tam ke'ikr, right? Some of us discussed this. Tam ke'ikr, the rule that a tam of treif is treif, is that d'oraisa or d'rabbanan? Tarovas of Isser and Heter, is that also d'oraisa or d'rabbanan? So maybe a tarovas of Isser and Heter is only Usser Midrabbanan, right? Maybe it's only Usser Midrabbanan. That's what the Shach quoted from his Mechutin is saying, etc. That maybe it's only Usher Midrabanan, right? That's what he says. He says that, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think there's his Mechutin said, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, no, that's not. Okay, but that's one answer that he quotes. Is that maybe tam ke'ikr, tam of treif, is only in Isser D'Rabbanan. Problem is, that's not how we paskin in Sif Beis. So basically, a lot of svaras that are not how we paskin. Says the Shach, maybe tam is only Usser Midrabanan. And therefore, we're only believing the Anamid Isser Drabanan. That's not how we paskin. The Shach quotes another Manda Amar that a Mesiach et Lefitumo is Neman if there's no Chezkas Isser. And here there's no Chezkas Isser. The only problem is that that's against the Gemara. The Taz says, this is what Noach was quoting before, the Taz says, no, there's Eidos and there's Nemonis. Eidos means when you need Eidos, like by Dine Mamonos and Dover Dover Mamon and Dover Sheva Erva, Ishos, etc. In Eidos, a Gmesiach Lefituma is the only Nemon in Durabonans. But by Isurim, you don't need real Eidos, Noach was saying. It's not a Dim Eidos, it's just that we believe you. It's not formal Eidos, just informal Nemonis. I may see if tumos neman in isurim d'oraisa, just not for eidos, like for you know, for Ishos, etc. So what does he say? He says, Emesiach lefitumo is Neman Hecha Lo Beinon Eidos. Okay. Basically, the problem with all these three answers is that they're against the Shulchan Aruch in various places. Maybe some of them could theoretically be right, but all these are against the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Bechoros is explicit that Beisich Vitumo is not Neman by Yisurim Doraisa, even in things that don't need Eidos. The Shulchan Aruch is Beforesh and the Rashba and many others that Tam of Treif is an Issur Doraisa, not an Issur Darabanan. And the Shach proofs in the Gemara that Beisich Vitumo is not Neman even when there's no Cheskes Issur. None of these are great answers. Even the Taz admits that his answer is not a good answer according to the Shulchan Aruch, just theoretically. So what's the real answer according to the Shulchan Aruch? The Shach and the Gra give the best answer. And two advantages of the Shach and Gra's answer. Number one, it's the only answer that worked for the first Sarachion. Number two, it's probably pshat in the Rambam as well. So what's the real pshat? The real pshat l'chora is... the Shach and the Gra. Okay, what do the Shach and the Gra say? It's like this. Usually, part of the calculus of whether someone's Neman or not is whether they're afraid of getting caught, right? One reason not to lie is because you're afraid of getting caught. What are the odds that I might get caught that would cause me not to lie? I know every situation is a little different. 10%, 5%, 1%, 20%. You know, maybe it depends on an uman or not. Let me ask the following question. What about a weird case where if I was lying, 100% of the time I'd get caught? That's a weird case, right? Like, that means that everyone already knows the truth and they're asking me. But 100% they'll be able to see if I'm telling the truth or not. So says the Shach, in that case, no one would lie. No one would lie if 100% they'd be caught. Now, but where do you ever have a case that 100% you'd be caught? Like Noah Shapiro, if I 100% could find out the truth without you, why would I ever ask you your to testify, right? It's a weird case. Nope, the only case is this. I'm asking the guy if it tastes like lard. Why am I asking him? Because I can't taste it myself because it might be usser. If the guy says it tastes like lard, then we're not relying on him. I throw it in the garbage. If the guy says it doesn't taste like lard, what does the guy know? That, or either way, other people are going to eat it. When other people eat it, they'll know if it tastes like lard or not. This is not like regular eaters. Regular eat is something that happened already. You might or may not get caught lying. That's like Adam Zolman. All right, I ask you, Sasha, what happened yesterday? You might or may not get caught if you lied. But if I ask you, Sasha, right now, what time is it? And you tell me it's 5:30, I'll just look at my clock and I'll see that you're lying, right? You're much more likely to tell the truth if I'm not asking you about the past like normal ages. I'm asking about something that I could check right now. And as a matter of fact, the guy knows eventually they're going to take this soup home and eat it. Why do people cook soup if they're not going to eat it? And when they eat it, they will see what it tastes like. And then they'll know if he was lying or not. Therefore, this is a unique case. It's a milsa davida legluye is one of the phrases they use. Something that will for sure be revealed. Something that will for sure be revealed. Everyone's afraid to lie. Guy, Jew, professional, non-professional, etc. This can answer the two tzarchiyons. How did Rashi and the Rashi and the Yosef rely on Masech Levitumo? The answer is, they rely on Masech Levitumo here for an Isidor Raisa. I mean, not Rashi. Rashi thinks Tom is only Drabanan. But how did the Beis Yosef and the Rashba, who think Tam is Doraisa, rely on Masech Vitumo? The answer is because here he has an additional nemunus that he knows they're going to find out the truth. And how could the Rambam rely on a guy Stam? Because the Rambam says that this Svara is so good, meaning other people didn't think of the Svara. But the Shach says, no, the Rashba and Beis Yosef think this Svara is so good that together with Masech Vitumo, it gives a guy nemunus. And the Rambam thinks this far is even better. This far is so good that even without any help from anything else, it gives a goy nem on us. It's taka, good svara. Now we understand. I think for sure this has to be the answer to both tzarech iyuns. The only difference is the Rashba and the Beis Yosef think that this is a pretty strong svara. but it needs help from Misael Vitumo to give it Nemonis. And the Rambam thinks this is a super duper 100% strong Svara. So even without help of any other reason, any other Svara, it gives a guy Nemonis. Okay, that's probably the shot. It's a Milson of Ilagluye. Unlike every other case where you might get caught, here you'll for sure get caught. When you for sure get caught, it's different. Okay, those of us who learned some of these sugyas, remember that the Ravid brought up that shita in the case of Edus Isha, of Edus Aguna, etc. Okay, we're not going to go through all of Shas whenever we have that shita, but like we all understand the logic. Okay, so much for Sif Aleph. I've discussed almost everything that there is to say about Sif Aleph, except for one big halacha lemaisa issue, which is a tangent. What's the very important halacha lemaisa tangent in Sif Aleph is the question of the Taz in Sif Katan Aleph. Base, I mean, sorry, Aleph is very small. He asked the following question. Why can't a Jew taste it if lard, remember we said min b'she'eino mino, a guy taste it. Or if there's no guy, you check if it's more or less than a 60th. Because a Jew can't taste it. Why can't a Jew taste it? Because 50-50, it might taste like lard and be treif. Ask the Tav the following question. Why can't a Jew taste what's called min v'she'eino mino iser beheter? Right? Min v'she'eino mino, where iser falls into heter, or lard in vegetable soup. The Jew can't eat lard, but why can't the Jew taste lard? Let the Jew just taste it without swallowing. As a matter of fact, let him just lick it and taste it on his tongue. And then the Jew will tell if it tastes like lard or not. Good question of the Taz. Ask the Taz. Why can't the Jew taste the taroves without eating it? Valid question, right? So here is a fundamental machlokas. Says the Taz, it would be mutter, but ineffective. You can't really tell what something tastes like with your tongue until you actually swallow it. That's what the Taz says. The Taz says, "Hayitzarich lito gachkila mamish kidei lahargishim yesham ta'am." Says the Taz. Mutter, but inaccurate. The Jew could taste it. He's talking, there's two kinds of tasting, by the way. There is tasting with your, what are the two kinds of tasting? There is tasting with your tongue, like to lick it, and then there's to swish it around your mouth and spit it out. He's talking about licking it with your tongue. You could taste it. However, that wouldn't be an accurate read. But if you look at the Pesach Tshuva here, he quotes a diuk from the Shach in Sivkotin Membez, and he quotes the Prima Godim who makes this diuk. Says the Prima Godim Al Pi Shach. He says, no, Usser. The reason that you can't taste is because it's Usser to taste something treif. The Chiddush is even something that might be treif. What's the diet? Shachs of Cotton Membez has a certain taste test. If there's no, I hope I have the old English words right, you check the liver, which is supposed to have a gallbladder attached to it. There's no gallbladder attached to it. Then that could be a treifa, unless there's an invisible gallbladder. How do you tell? If you lick the place of the gallbladder and it tastes bitter, gall, right? Then you know that it really counts the gallbladder and it's okay. All right, this is, I'm not totally up on all the anatomy. But says the Shach, you're allowed to lick it. Oh, it might be treifa. No, because it's very likely that it'll be okay, that it'll be bitter. So if it's very likely to be kosher, you can lick it. But if it's suffic gummer, then it might be treif, then you can't. So machlokes, Shach and Taz, whether you're allowed to taste something that might be treif or not. And we paskin like the shach that you cannot even taste treif. You can't even lick it if it's even if it just might be treif. Certainly if it's certainly treif. And certainly you can't swish it around your mouth and spit it out. But then we get into this question of Tzemach Tzedek. He quotes Neshut Tzemach Tzedek. He doesn't mean here the Lubavitcher Tzemach Tzedek. This is what the Achronim called Tzemach Tzedek HaKadmon, an early Achron who wrote a Shut Tzemach Tzedek, two famous Tzemach Tzedeks. But this is the Tzemach Tzedek HaKadmon is the phrase. He doesn't say that here the Achronim used to mean the earlier Tzemach Tzedek, who I forget his name, but was one of the early Achronim, who wanted to know if you could taste a certain kind of soap to see if it was made properly, like they had the right amount of salt, not for eating, just for the recipe, for the chemistry. And he says it's okay, even though it's made of treif, because it tastes bad, and it's a davar pugum. And if it tastes bad, that's okay. That seems to imply that you can taste treif. But then he quotes the Noda Behuda, who had a long analysis and says, no. The Tzemach Tzedek never meant you can taste treif. That was only a specific heter for things that taste bad, not for anything treif, only for things that have a bad taste. Okay, as a matter of fact, what's the havmina maybe for anything treif derabanan? Because something that tastes bad might be treif derabanan. I said, no, only. So therefore, adds the, Tzemach Tzedek, lefi noda de Yehuda, according to the Tzemach Tzedek, you might have thought that it's also by older derabanans. But it's mutter if the iser is pugum. Okay, he might have meant it's mutter by all iser and drabbanan. And then Noda Yehuda says only if the iser is pugum. The end of the Pesachei Tshuva quotes, and even the Noda Yehuda says only to lick with your tongue, not to swish it in your mouth and spit it out. I'm not sure why he said that. I have the Noda Yehuda right here in front of me, and he says mefurish even to swish it in your mouth and spit it out. This underlies the big machlokas nowadays. Back in Rav Belsky's days, it was a big machlokas between Rav Belsky and Rav Schechter at the OU. Do you need a hashgacha for toothpaste or not? Does toothpaste and mouthwash and other things need a hashgacha or not? What's the problem? The problem is that there are many shitas. I'm not going through all the shitas. You know, you want, I don't know, Google, does toothpaste need to be kosher? And you could find all different svaras. There are many different svaras that were brought up over the generations. I'm just going to bring the most basic machlokas. What's the issue? A lot of toothpaste and mouthwashes might be treif because they often contain an ingredient called glycerin. Glycerin is a very, very important chemical. Super duper important chemical. It's like a very basic chemical. You know, if you're in chemistry, like, you know, you'll understand how important it is. I don't. I just know as a balabas that, like, go to the Wikipedia page for glycerin and it'll tell you like 10 different things that it's really, really useful for, from like machinery to chemistry to food science to medicine, etc. It's like it's really one of these really, really important molecules. Okay. But one of the, and there's many reasons people put it in food. One of the reasons is it's a sweetener. Some people say, glycerin is not roi l'achila. What do you mean? Glycerin is a sweetener. I mean, if glycerin's not roi l'achila, then sugar's not roi l'achila. That's ridiculous. So glycerin is, and what's the problem with glycerin? It's such a pushit chemical that you can make glycerin out of anything. I don't mean out of anything. You can't make glycerin out of tin. I mean, you can make glycerin out of any carbon-based, life form, which means plants or animals. Anything, any plant or animal you can make into glycerin, bekalei kalut. What's the problem? Problem is you can make glycerin out of everything. So they do make glycerin out of everything. How do they decide what to make glycerin out of? I don't know, whatever they can buy really cheap. That's made of a plant or an animal they make glycerin out of. So all glycerin, now obviously in kashrus, so some factories produce glycerin and they have a hashgacha that they only make it from plant material, and some factories don't have hashgacha, they make from animal material. So all glycerin might be treif. And, you know, at a certain point, there's no way to find out. You know, after it's been sold and resold enough times, there's no way to find out what it was, you know, if it didn't have a hashgacha. So obviously, whatever manufactured kosher gets hashgacha glycerin. There's also non-hashgacha glycerin. And most toothpaste and mouthwash have glycerin in them. They usually have either glycerin or sorbitol. They need some sweetener because otherwise it would be too disgusting for people nowadays. So, but many of them have glycerin. Generally, if it has sorbitol and not glycerin, then it's not really significant odds that it would be treif. But if it has glycerin, it could very well be treif. Okay, so how about treif mouthwash and toothpaste? Is it a problem or not? Says Rav Schechter, it is no problem because you don't eat it. All you do is swish it in your mouth and spit it out. And it's really pogum. It's not edible. And therefore, it's no problem based on this Noda Yehuda and this Semach Tzedek, etc. You know, he brings many other rice, etc. Rav Schechter says it's okay. Okay, he throws it in the end. If you go to the store, if you live in Israel and you go to the supermarket and, you know, 9 out of every 10 toothpaste have a hashgacha on them, then you might as well buy them. You know, he still thinks it's a nice chumrah, but let's say you don't live in Israel and your supermarket doesn't sell kosher toothpaste or whatever. You can find in Borough Park some kosher toothpaste, but you're not going to Borough Park or whatever. It's not what you need for your, you know, dental care for whatever reason. Then don't worry about it. Says Rav Schechter, toothpaste and mouthwash are okay because of this Noda Yehuda. Rav Belsky, Zatzal, Lahavdil, Ben Chaim, L'Chaim, argued on him and said, no, toothpaste and mouthwash are delicious. After all, people, it has a great taste. And a chanami, you wouldn't swallow and eat the whole thing, but it's not because it has a bad taste. It has a good taste. It's just like, you know, it's, I think what Belsky said is that, no, taka, like, the taste of it is good, just the mahos of it is something that we're not used to eating, for various technical reasons. But he says that taka has a good taste. And according to Rebelsky, that taka, it has a, that taka has a good taste. It's machlok, do you consider it pugum or roi lachila? Schechter says that's another pugum. You can't eat toothpaste. You can't eat mouthwash. That's ridiculous. Rebelsky says, sure you can. It has a good taste. It's not makobel to do it. You know, maybe there'd be some, I don't know, aftertaste or side effect or weirdness about it, but it tastes fine. After we like the taste of these things, they put in a nice sweet minty taste, whatever. Okay, that's a fundamental machlokes. Rav Belsky says it's good to eat. Once it's good to eat, even if it's only a suffix, whether it's treif. So we pass like the shach that you're not allowed to taste something which might be treif. And even the Taz didn't say you could swish it in your mouth, just that you could lick it to see what it tastes like. So Rav Belsky says you need kosher toothpaste or mouthwash because it's good to eat. Rav Schechter says it is not good to eat. I also heard from Rabbi Willig once that toothpaste and mouthwash are not considered good to eat, are not considered edible. They're considered davar pugum. And once it's davar pugum, then it's pashut that this chumrah of the shach doesn't apply to davar pugum. Davar pugum, you could even swish around your mouth. I know the Pesach Teshuva says the Noda Yehuda didn't let you swish it in your mouth, but that's just a mistake. And the Noda Yehuda he did. And that's the basis of this machlokes. The Minhaga Olam has always been to use toothpaste and mouthwash without a hechsher. When I was a kid, there was no such thing as toothpaste and mouthwash with a hechsher. Only before Pesach, if you went to like very, very from places, you could find some weird brand that you didn't even know how to pronounce it that came with hashgacha for Pesach. But all year long, when I was a kid, I don't think anyone was makbid that their toothpaste or mouthwash be kosher. So I think that's because we really hold like Rav Schechter. Okay. And now that I live in Eretz Yisrael and 9 out of every 10 toothpaste in the supermarket are kosher. So I buy one with a hashgacha, even if it's not a mahadran hashgacha, I buy it. Even in America, so I look for the ones with sorbitol if it was all else was equal. But okay, so it's nice to be machmer on the toothpaste and mouthwash. Nowadays, by the way, a lot of mouthwashes have hashgachas in America, right? That's changed. Scope has hashgacha, Listerine has hashgacha. I think all the name brands have hashgacha nowadays. That's changed since I was a kid. But the toothpaste in America still don't have hashgachas. So I guess someone in America decided that the minhag was the machmer that mouthwashes are good to eat and toothpaste aren't. Not sure. There's probably some svara. I don't see exactly why. Anyway, the basis all comes down to this note of Yehuda. Do you call it something good or something pugum? Ben.
So then would the reason to say pugum things like non-kosher gum be because it's not pugum because it tastes good?
non-kosher gum for sure tastes good, right? That's pasha that it tastes good. So then that's pasha that everyone would asser it. Yeah, the reason why Rav Abadi, who, as we know, is a maverick, is rumored, maybe it's true, to matar non-kosher gum is, I heard this klisheni, he has some very fancy schmancy svara, which is that when they make non-kosher gum, it doesn't fully make sense to me. Okay, you know what? If I say it over and it doesn't make sense to me, then I'm just going to be telling Lashon Hara about him because, you know, he says things that are not mainstream and that are very radical, but he has a logic. So I'm not sure if this rumor is true that Ravadi was matar non-kosher gum, and if so, exactly what his svara was. But, you know, I heard something, but I don't know how to make sense of it. So right now, we'll leave that, but Sarachian. We don't know why he was matar, if he was matar, and why he was matar non-kosher gum. I heard that somehow he had a masora that all the ingredients of the gum are kosher, except for one part, which is the part that doesn't have flavor that you spit out at the end. So you're not eating the non-kosher part. But that, you know, it sounds a little weird that someone really come to that conclusion. B'mtzias sounds a little too specific for me, so I'm not sure. Sorry, Ian. Yoni.
Hi. Rebbe said that in terms of mouthwash, what was it that Rebbe said about the difference between that and toothpaste?
I said I wasn't sure, but nowadays in America, all the mouthwashes, don't all the mouthwashes in America have hashgacha nowadays? And none of the toothpaste do.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. No, I'm just thinking. No, I'm not sure, honestly. But in terms of mouthwash, I was wondering if there could be a certain type of pugum that they'll say a warning on the label. If you drink this and you have too much, you have to call a doctor immediately and make sure that your stomach is okay. So, I mean, and toothpaste is made to swallow. I mean, they have children eat toothpaste.
Yeah. Okay. So first of all, I question your metzias. But also, more importantly, I question your din. Let's say something, if you eat it, too much of it, will harm you, but it's delicious. I'm not sure that makes it any roi lachi.
Oh, yeah, no, I was asking. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I haven't seen this before. My intuition is, even though, I mean, ain't the diver sof, right? If you eat too many french fries, you die. I mean, that's what the mainstream media says, at least. But does that mean french fries aren't roi lachi? Again, you know, if you really believe the whoever, then everything that tastes halfway decent will kill you if you don't refrain from it. In the devil self. I think even if let's say Taka, there was this delicious, you know, candy. Delicious candy. The problem is if you eat more than one bag of it, you die. I still think it's roi lachila. Oh, it's harmful for you, et cetera, et cetera. But it's delicious to eat. You know, that's the fact that it poisons you doesn't change the fact it's delicious to eat. Kach nirolani is daiti. Okay.
On Yom Kippur, when I had to take pills, Rosh Hechter told me to put Listerine, have like a cup that's like a shot glass that's half Listerine, and to take the medicine with that.
We should say that Listerine is not edible. As a matter of fact, I was told that Rav Schwab also paskin, maybe that's where Rav Schechter got it from. Then the old days, that's where Schwab paskin for everyone. Yeah. Do you know who Rav Schwab was?
Rav Shimon Schwab?
Yeah. He was the Rav for decades and decades of the Breuer's Kehillah, in Washington Heights. He was considered really one of the Gedolei Hador in America. Nowadays, whoever's the Rav of the Breuer's Kehillah in Washington Heights is not a famous rabbi in America. Not chas v'shalom to impugn his stature, just it's not such a big kehillah anymore. But back in Shimon Schwab's days, he was considered one of the gedolim of America. And they say that when someone needed to take a pill on Yom Kippur and couldn't take it without water, he would tell them take it with mouthwash. So that shows that he was very sure of himself that mouthwash was not roi lachila. Okay, so that makes sense that Rav Schechter would say that as well. Okay, Noah Shapiro, you had a question?
Yeah, just with the grout, if the guy tells you that it's treif and you throw it out, how is it mosa dava ligui?
That case, it's not. But in that case, you didn't rely on him, so it's okay. Mimanisha, if you relied on him, it's avida ligui.
But he knows he can lie and tell you it's treif every time and you're never going to catch him.
I mean, but that's not a halachic problem. That's just a problem of your, you know, your pocketbook's problem. That's not your neshama's problem, right? First of all, the guy might not know that, right? But even if he does know that, he might not know that. Because remember, in Mesichah V'Tumah, he might not. But even if he does know that, who cares? That just means he could cause you to lose money unfairly. But he can't cause you to do an isser. So it's taka, sad that he causes you to lose money, but it's not a halachic problem.
It doesn't fundamentally undermine his nemanus and the fact
I don't think so. Because mimanashach, you're only momming him. You're not momming him when he says that it's treif. You're only momming him when he says it's kosher. Right? It was treif before you asked him. I mean, it was a chashash treif before you asked him. You're only momming him when you eat it. So I think that's why it's not a problem. Okay. Binyamin Pfeiffer.
No one is cholik on the tzemach tzedek, right? Like that if it's pogrom, it's not an issue.
Someone's always cholik on everyone, but no one who's quoted in the achronim on the daf is cholik on the tzemach tzedek, and I think it's mekubal that we agree with him. I'm sure someone's cholik on him. You know, yeah, once you get the achronim, someone's cholik on everyone. There's 1,000 achronim out there.
Like, I assume if there's like food that's pogrom, let's say, I don't know if it's a pot or something like that, does that come up whether we can like taste like the mixture that's made in the pot? If it's no talifgam, how does that ever come up?
No, because you have to be mechalik, we'll see, between nosin talifgam and pogrom. Pogrom means it's not good to eat. Nosin talifgam means it's delicious to eat. It's just a little less delicious because of the old taste in the pot. But he meant if something is pogrom, not if it's no seitam. No seitam gam means the thing could have like 100 deliciousness, and then you cook it in this pot, now it's only 99 deliciousness. That's no seitam gam. It's not what he's talking about. He's talking about something. He's talking about soap. Soap is mamish not good to eat. So I don't see where it would come up a lot. Yoni.
The tzemach tzedek was matter even if you had real complete pogrom things to swallow it or just to swish around and spit out?
Just to swish around and spit out.
So how does the fact that Rav Schechter says that Listerine is pogrom make a difference that you're actually swallowing? And once you're swallowing, you might as well have water.
Oh, you don't mean in the case of regular mouthwash. Regular mouthwash, you don't swallow. You mean in the Yom Kippur case, right?
In the Yom Kippur case, I mean, yes.
Ah, because that's for a chole, it's different. That's mefurish that for a chole you can eat bad tasting treif. Yeah, a chole can eat spoiled ham, you know, not all he wants, only if the doctor tells him to. For a chole, you're allowed to eat spoiled ham. That's for a chole. That's a different thing. We'll get to it. Okay, the real truth might be a little more makel than I'm telling you now. But I'm telling you now what everyone would, you know, the most machmer possibility would still say a chole could eat spoiled ham, if it would help. You know, personally, I would tell a chole to avoid I would tell even a bari to avoid spoiled ham, because it's probably not going to be very helpful. But lu yitzur, the chole needed some chemical that came from spoiled ham, it would be fine. Okay. We didn't yet get to Se'if Beis, but at this hour, I don't want to start a very, very big Se'if. So we'll pick up Amir Tzashem Sunday. We'll have time to, a lot of Seder time to plow further into Simon Sadiches. If you want to see something cute, here's a good riddle. If you want to see something cute having to do with Sif Beis, look in the Nefesh HaRav, page 228 to 229 for a story. And the riddle is, look in the Nefesh HaRav, page 228 to 229 if you want to see a cute story. If not, I'll say it over in Shir, meaning don't prioritize this. But if you want to solve the riddle, figure out based on something in the page in the, the Mefarshim that we generally learn, how you could disagree with what's written in the Nefesh HaRav, page 228 to 229. Let me just double check those page numbers. Yes. Okay. In any case, we'll pick up Mir Tzashem Sunday. There's a lot of Hilchos Taruvos left. There's not so much left of the year. So I think we're going to have to pick up the pace a little. Now that we are experienced Yoredeia learners, we can certainly pick up the pace starting in the next year, Amir Tzashem. Definitely full speed ahead in Seder time. I will be available as usual in the in my Zoom office during Seder time for anyone who wants to come come ask questions, be mevatel Torah, anything in between. And I wish everyone who needs it a refuah shleima, and everyone who doesn't need it that Hashem should protect you and you shouldn't get sick. And I'm looking forward to being back with you in person as soon as I'm allowed back in person, as soon as half of you are, you know, allowed out of your bidud, to come to Beis Medrash in person, as well. So have a great day, everybody. Anyone wants to ask questions, please, of course, feel free.
Thanks so much.
What's the new pace, like 2 or 3 se'ifim a day, Ashir?
The new pace, you know what? Which kind of Shulchan Aruch do most people have? Hold up the cover of your Shulchan Aruch for me.
I have the same as Noah Shapiro. I don't have it here, though.
Aha. So we have a lot of people have Bahirs, I see. Okay, I also have a Bahir at home, although it's not right here. Is there a Yoridea WhatsApp group?
Yes.
Okay. So how about if someone volunteers, let's say Binyamin, I will check my, I don't want to make everyone hold on while I go look for my Sfarim, but I will check my Bahir because I see at least half of you have the Bahir, and because Sifim is not as important as pages really. Sifim is a bad way to measure. Pages is a much better way to measure. I will check my Bahir and approximate how many pages I'm going to want to cover for Shir, and I'll need a lot of Ezra Hashem to actually do it. So, and then I will tell Binyamin, I'll WhatsApp Binyamin, and he'll pass it on to the Shir. Okay, thank you for that suggestion. Good suggestion.
Great.
Thank you, Eddie.
Toda rabah. Tzareim tovim.
All right, have a great day, everybody.